Ira, tell me why you trust Bill Curry Ford and general manager Sean Sullivan.
Well, I'm talking about personal experience here. I'm not talking about reading somebody else's reviews. We've had a cherry red Ford Escape for almost a year. Absolutely zero issues, zero problems. Brought it down when it needed an oil change. Fabulous showroom, great service department. Rides like a dream. Fighting with my wife over who gets to ride it. And it's been a fantastic experience. Not only that, but I love talking to Sean Sullivan about the Bucks. You know, he challenges me. He challenges some of my assumptions. He's got a very strong point of view on this franchise. Bleeds Buck. And would love you to come in, get a deal done. He's very, very flexible with pricing, financing, insurance. It's an all-purpose stop. And you might get a little education on Buccaneer football while you're at it.
BillCurryFord.com. Bill Curry Ford. Fantastic. 60 years. Mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway.
Win the game, go 8-3, and you're going to get in the damn playoffs.
Our next road game at Big Storm Clearwater, that's not until December 20th. That is going to be Fan Appreciation Day at Big Storm Ira. We've got a whole pile of giveaways, and Florida's Elite Restoration is buying everybody a beer before kickoff. That's a 1 o'clock game against the Falcons December 20th. Going to be a lot of fun. I'll be there hassling you, Ira. But Big Storm Beer, that's your beer for the holidays. Great time to stock up. Bring it to your Thanksgiving dinners. Big Storm, unbelievable all across the state of Florida.
Steve, that's a great gesture from our friends at Florida's Elite Restoration. They don't have to do that, but it's an indication of how far they'll go, you know, to earn your trust. And if you have a mold problem, don't wait on it. Call them immediately, because a small problem can develop into a major hassle very quickly.
That's right, Ira. Florida's Elite Restoration is your first phone call. If you see water where it doesn't belong, if you smell mold, if you see mold, don't call your insurance company. Call them immediately. They'll give you a free assessment. They'll guide you if you need your insurance company involved, if it's a big job. And, of course, they handle all kinds of disasters. Florida's ElitRestoration.com. We know them personally. They'll be out at Big Storm. You can talk to them if you have a question about something else. But that is your disaster company in the Bay Area. And you can call them 24/7. They will respond immediately. And that's just a great comfort for you. Even if you don't have a problem now, you should remember Florida's Elite Restoration. When you do have a problem, you call them, you'll get a free estimate, and you go from there.
I think I know what I'm talking about here.
It is that time, Buccaneers fans. The Ira Kaufman Podcast, presented by Bill Curry Ford, starring the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the baron of Big Storm beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton, everybody's favorite sage, Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. We got a lot to talk about. Ira, Monday Night Football approaches. We actually have to predict this game on this podcast as well. How are you?
I'm excited. I'll tell you why I'm excited. Because this massive remodeling that's going on is nearing the final lap, gentlemen. The house is in total disarray. Cosmo's in his cage most of the day. He ain't too happy about that. Most of the big work's been done. The walk-in shower has been completed. I used it this morning for the first time. And no, there are no photos on Twitter. Don't even look for them, because Twitter wouldn't post them anyway, because I've got the body of what I am, a senior citizen, gentlemen. But I did use the shower, and the drain worked. I'm excited because they're almost finished, and we can get this house back in order, and I can invite the Kemper and Isbitz and Sean Sullivan and Zach, and we'll all celebrate pretty soon, gentlemen, pretty soon.
Well, Ira, that naked visual you tried to give us was very disturbing, but we will get the podcast back on track.
I think Lee's speechless at this point.
I'm trying not to think about it.
Excellent, wise move, Lee. All right, Ira, but I will say, you know, years ago covering the Yankees in Tampa, I did unfortunately have the unfortunate incident of running into Don Zimmer naked in the locker room of the Yankees. So, Ira, nothing will top that or go below that, depending on how you want to
You're gonna compare me to that fire hydrant? Now, come on. You're better than that. Hey, Steve, I'm not finished with the shower story, because when I towelled off and walked out, my wife informs me that now that we got this beautiful glass-enclosed shower, I got to wipe down the doors of the shower and the tiles after each time that I take a shower. I said, this is too much work. Well, what's going on? Might as well go back to the way I had it with a shower curtain. Who the heck needs work like that?
Listen, Ira, all different kinds of directions to go to here. And let me go to something a little bit fun, because for fans, Pro Bowl voting has opened. A lot of us love to cry about this Buccaneer didn't make a Pro Bowl. This guy didn't get respect. The fan vote is 1/3 of the vote and it's open. Ira, who is getting your Pro Bowl vote? If you were going there right now, who are you clicking on for the Buccaneers?
Ronald Jones, number 3 rusher in the league. He's averaging 5 yards a carry. Steve, am I correct? Yeah, 5.1. Outstanding. Lee, that's a little better than 1.9 from his rookie year. A little bit better. A little bit of improvement. I think Brady's on the fringes. You know, you got Wilson. You got Rodgers. Maybe another guy or Kyler Murray. He's on the fringes. I don't think at this point Godwin or Evans or Gronkowski deserve to make it. I think Marpet, before he got hurt, was a very strong candidate, but he's missed a couple of games. Missed a third game. I turn to the defense, gentlemen, and I think I'm looking at Levante David. And I think I'm looking at Carlton Davis and possibly Devin White. So those would be my guys.
On NFL.com, they were trying to determine the first-time Pro Bowlers. And they picked someone for the Bucs as a first-time Pro Bowler. I would go elsewhere, but see what you think. Who would be your first-time Pro Bowler?
Carlton Davis.
I didn't think of him. I was thinking of someone else, but okay. I would suggest Tristan Wirfs.
You didn't necessarily say rookie. You said first-time. All right, first-time. Well, that's a lot of credit for Tristan Wirfs. You may not be far off, Lee. You're saying he's top three right tackles in the conference. I'm not sure you're wrong, Lee. I'm not sure you're wrong. With Devin White, you know, I'll say this. I think he's a really good player, but I still think he's got a ways to go in coverage, Lee. And for that reason alone, I think he falls a little short.
Yeah, I wouldn't call Devin White an all-around linebacker yet for the very reason you cite, Ira. He's exceptional against the run. Blitz, he's improved. He could probably improve more. Yeah, and the pass coverage, as you stated, he needs some work there. But, I mean, he's exceptional run defense at his position. No question about that.
Sage, I'm going to go with the first guy you mentioned because I think it's the only no-brainer. It's such a no-brainer by 3 or 4 or 5 steps. Ronald Jones is the 3rd leading rusher in the National Football League, number 2 in the NFC. That's the definition of a Pro Bowler. So I'm voting Jones over and over again. He deserves it until he doesn't deserve it. But right now, that's a no-brainer.
Now, Steve, I will caution you on this. He's got more rushing yards than Alvin Kamara, Steve. But if I asked you who you're taking tomorrow on your team, you're taking Alvin Kamara. So we got to temper it a little bit because Kamara is such a dual threat. And Lee, Ronald Jones at this point is not N-O-T capital letters, a dual threat. Stone hands, tendency to fumble, just very, very far from being a polished receiver out of the backfield, Lee.
Yeah, he's not a good receiver yet, but certainly a great runner. Fantastic story. And I think we mentioned this on the pod before, but my mind's working overdrive. Why does Arians keep bringing up his confidence? And McNair brings it up. I mean, every time they talk, it's not like they're being asked about it. They invite this. They introduce that subject. Whenever they talk about Ronald Jones, I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking this guy had some real issues that needed, you know, professional help. Not just one coach, more than one coach. And that's all they talk about. And again, reporters don't ask him about this. It's just they introduce this. Where are you bringing this up all the time? You know, it's after a while, you keep saying Mike Evans has a bum ankle, Mike Evans has a bum ankle, Mike Evans has a bum ankle. Well, pretty soon, he's got a bum ankle, you know.
When Arians came to town, he must have looked at Ronald Jones and saw a guy who was the shell of himself. He really had to resurrect him.
Yeah, I mean, we'll never know for sure. The book on Ronald Jones was that he was very, very immature. But Lee's got a strong point when he says that nobody really asks about Rojo's confidence and in the way that coaches talk about it. And it's kind of like, you know, if I always describe you as sober, people are going to think you have a drinking problem, even if you don't. So it's kind of that sort of way. Ira, Tom Brady jumps on national radio, Sirius XM NFL radio early in the morning, and he's talking to his old coach, Charlie Weiss. And Weiss made a couple of sort of backhanded comments that, hey, you know, you don't show me a lot of love anymore. You could have been on the show earlier, sort of thing. And Weiss asked him about night games. And he said, hey, has it been a huge adjustment for all these guys on your team? All of a sudden, Tommy Brady rolls into town and they got night games left and right. And Brady, instead of addressing the night games, he kind of blows it off and says, hey, you know, what was sort of what was news to me is that none of these guys have really played in the playoffs. Most of them haven't played in the playoffs. And he thinks that that was more of a big deal. And he says that, you know, I want them to experience that. It's an amazing part of being a pro. And he goes on to say, Ira, about the team, that Brady really implied that he learned a strong lesson in 2015 when the Patriots were 10-0, and then they finished 12-4 and didn't get to the Super Bowl. So I was just thinking, Ira, combining those two things together, and you think about Brady's leadership, where he's able to look these guys in the face and say, 7-3, I was 10-0, and we fell apart. You guys don't know anything yet. We haven't done anything. And interesting takes from Brady.
The first thing that I react to from what you said was, I sure wish Brady was this candid on the damn Zoom calls. I mean, I can't get anything. The guy might not even say the sky's blue on these Zoom calls. He's so programmed. You know, they score 46 points, and the first thing the guy says every week is, we got to get better, and it starts with me. I don't want to hear that line anymore, Brady, if you're listening to this podcast. Stop that one. Take it out of your vocabulary. He goes on these radio shows, and, you know, the guy's a good quote. We get nothing out of the guy. As far as the playoff experience, he's right. I mean, he's telling the truth, except for, you know, Gronkowski and Ndamukong Suh, who's been in some playoff games. There's not much there. There just isn't. Maybe that's a factor with the problems with primetime. I know Arians is changing up the protocols, gentlemen. Something better change, because I got a newsflash. When the Bucks are in the playoffs this year, and I'm almost sure they will be, they're going to be on primetime, or they're going to have a national television audience. So they better get used to it. But Brady, you got to get better on your Zoom calls. I'm not saying you got to play better, but you got to talk better. How do you like that, DeKemper?
Doesn't mean anything to me. If he doesn't want to give me anything, I don't have to waste my time listening. That's why after one or two press conferences, I quit going to Josh McCown's press conferences. The guy made art out of saying a lot, but in reality saying nothing. I mean, he could babble for 20 minutes. You can't get anything out of him, but he'd talk. And so, you know, hey, if you're not going to give me anything, I'm not going to waste my time. That's also another reason why I quit going to Lovey's press conference. He wouldn't give you anything outside of simple as that. Well, you know, simple as this. See ya.
Steve, let's not compare Josh McCown and Tom Brady. I mean, according to DeKemper, you know, if he was doing something on a Pavarotti concert after the show, he wants to talk to the cymbal player, and he doesn't want to talk to Pavarotti. Now,
Pavarotti's not going to say anything. I'm not going to spin my wheels for no good reason. I'll say this. This will freak you out when I say this. I get more from Todd Bowles, as droll as he can be. I get more from Bowles than I do Brady.
But, Lee, you also know that our readers and listeners, you know, they go to town on anything Brady says, even if it's pablum. They want to hear it. They want to hear it. So the other half of you knows, Lee, as a newsman, that's who they want to hear from. I'm not disagreeing with you that what he says is in program, but it's still Tom Brady.
Yeah, I mean, Josh McCown, he can't have much to say other than, you know, hey, my record has moved to 16-47 as a starter. I've learned a lot. You know, what's he going to say? All right, listen, Ira, your column, very bold in some ways, Ira. Your column made it very clear. You basically put your foot down that Bucks win on Monday night. They're in the playoffs. It's a done deal. Wrap it up. Signed, sealed, delivered. It's over. Congratulations, Bucks.
And I'll tell you why. Besides the math, you know, going 8-3. And I say right at the top, Steve, that once you get there, if that's assuming a win against the Rams, certainly not a given, but if you get there, to avoid winning 10 games, you got to lose 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5. All you got to do is win 2 out of 5. And I'll take it a step further, Steve. I didn't say it in the column, but I'll say it right here and now. If they start 8-3 and they end up 9-7, they might and not make the playoffs. They might blow this whole thing up. The whole thing might be blown up. But I don't think it's going to happen. This team's a lot better than the 2010 roster. I don't know how the heck Morris won 10 games with those guys. This is Tom Brady in 2008. They folded with Jeff Garcia. Let's not put those two guys in the same sentence. Lee, if they go 8-3 and finish 9-7, it's a freaking disaster at One Buck Place.
Yeah, I mean, I always had a hunch that if they don't make the playoffs, I'd be very curious to see how they handle the near future, especially with, you know, the salary cap expected to be so much lower. That if you're going to blow it up, this would be the year to do it, because once again, there's going to be a massive, massive payroll cut. And that's not voluntary. It's going to be involuntary. So, yeah, if you're going to blow something up, this would be the time to do it, especially when, you know, your coach is ready to collect Social Security and your quarterback's middle-aged.
Steve, my other point in the column was that teams have gone 10-6 and not made the playoffs. Yeah, I did a little research, Steve. You noticed that. Did a little original research. Realignment occurred in 2002, which happened to be the Buck Championship season. That's the first time the league split into 8-14 divisions. And since that time, I think there were 10 teams that won 10 games or more and didn't make the playoffs. Now, that's 10. That's a big number. However, that's when 6 teams in each conference made the playoffs. So my further research showed in every one of those times except one, which was 2010, every other time that 10-win team would have made the playoffs with a 7th, a 3rd wild card team from each conference, which is what we have now. So that's one time in 18 years, one time. In 2002, we had the Bucks and Green Bay both won 10 games and neither made the playoffs that year. That was an aberration. So I'm saying get the 10-6 with the expanded playoff field and you will get into the playoffs. And to me, guys, I think that's what it's all about at this point. Can they win the division? Lee, they can, especially with the Breeze injury. But I don't think the Saints are going to fold their tent. They went 5-0 without Breeze last year. So, Lee, I think wild card's the way to go. And I think the big thing is to get the best record of the 3 NFC wild card teams, Lee. And then you go into Philly or into the Meadowlands to play the Giants, and the Bucks would be favored in that game on the road. Against a division champion, the Bucks would be favored.
Well, you just took the words out of my mouth. They might have to go back to the Meadowlands.
Yes.
New Jersey yes. Swamplands again. Boy, and there's, you know, he'll be what, in the 20s? Well, I guess Philly wouldn't be much warmer. The way I look at it, since Breeze has been injured, just worry about winning your next game. Just worry about winning your next game because, who knows? By the way, Ira, there's a prop bet on William Hill's sports gambling. They now have prop bets. And one of the prop bets for Sunday is, will Jameis throw a pick or not? I'm not making that up.
I didn't see the Saints game, Lee, against the 49ers, but Winston threw a pass right into the hands of a 49ers linebacker. The guy dropped the ball.
Yeah. You're right. You're correct.
We've got our own game to talk about. It is a very big game. I just wanted to throw that out there, Ira, since you were so bold in your column. But leading up to the stuff we're going to talk about this game, Ira, Arians did his radio show, and he surprised a little bit. He said that the Buccaneers are a very, very tired team, and that's why he gave them off. They didn't return until Thursday. I thought that was pretty telling, you know, no bye week yet, and that they're very tired. Of course, the Bucs have an older roster, even though they've got some quality young players, for sure. Interesting take there. Ira, wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
I was a little surprised Arian said that about a fatigued football team. You don't hear that very often. Granted, Lee, they haven't had their bye week, and most teams have. I understand that. But they're not the only team in the league that's played 10 games in 10 weeks. Not the only one. And to say it's fatigued and tired, it's not something I wanted to hear if I'm a Buck fan. It's almost like I hope he's not trying to lay the groundwork for a dismal effort Monday night. I'm sure that wasn't his intention, Lee. But, you know, it's kind of the thing where you throw it out there, you know, all of a sudden you're building in a safeguard if you have a sloppy performance. Buck Nation doesn't need to hear that kind of nonsense, Lee. This is a big, big game, and I'm sticking by my my guns here. Win the game, go 8-3, and you're going to get in the damn playoffs. And then Buck fans will take their chances. And it's a heck of a cushion with the Chiefs coming in the week later. And I'll say it again, the schedule after the bye, you can't ask for much better. Two games with the Falcons. I don't care what Raheem Morris is doing in Atlanta. That's a bad football team. Minnesota's surging, but you'll be coming off a bye week, extra time. It's a very favorable December schedule, any way you slice it up. Lee, I was a little surprised that he's talking about a tired football team.
Are you surprised in the sense that they did not look tired whatsoever against Carolina?
That's part of it. That's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I should be surprised or not. I guess I shouldn't be because, you know, what he said, it adds up. When's the last time the Bucs had a late bye? So most of these guys who have been on the team for a couple of years are not used to a late bye. So I can understand that. Also, again, you know, they sure didn't look tired against Carolina. Now, had Arians said that a week and a half ago, before the Saints game, the way they played against the Saints, or even after the Saints game, like, yeah, you look tired, all right. You look like you were dead, more than tired. But I don't know what to think about that. I really don't, because the only reason I am a little surprised, they did not look tired whatsoever against Carolina. They looked sharp as can be. So I guess in that respect, I'm a little surprised. But, you know, I don't see them every day. We don't get to see them. You know, I'm not going to waste my time to drive all the way out there to watch 20 minutes of guys warming up. And then you throw in the protocols, you know, the virus protocols. It's really no point to go out there these days. Maybe they are tired, maybe they're not. They sure didn't seem that way last Sunday.
Sage, I thought they had a bye week already against the Saints. Wasn't that a bye week?
Bye-bye.
You know, see, they got better as the game went on in Charlotte. So if they were, you know, if they're a tired football team, you would think the opposite would be true. Maybe they'd start fast and then fade. So it was quite the opposite in Charlotte.
I don't know. I wasn't 100% sure what to make of it, but from a gambling perspective, Ira, which I like to think in those terms often, you know, the Buccaneers with this Monday night game, this huge game, if they get up for this game and they're tired and they beat the Rams, and then what's next? A short week for the Chiefs, who are awfully fast and just look fresh all the time. I wouldn't bet on the Bucs beating the Chiefs if they actually take out the Rams. So just something to put in your gambling head there, Sage.
Not a bad time to play the Rams, guys, because they just lost maybe their best offensive lineman, Andrew Whitworth. Very, very good player in Cincinnati and still has a lot left in the tank and a real leader for the Rams up front in front of Goff. And, you know, I still think about that Saints game where the Bucs didn't blitz a lot, and Shaq and JPP were handled by those Saints tackles, which were outstanding. And now the Rams lost, a stalwart at tackle. So I think it opens up, if Bowles wants to go conservative again and rush primarily with four, I think the Bucs will have more success Monday night than they did against New Orleans.
Buccaneers fans, Black Friday starts now at Bill Curry Ford. Get an Amazon gift card up to $1,000 with every new vehicle purchase or lease at Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. BillCurryFord.com is the website. See all the tremendous offers right there. BillCurryFord.com.
Well, you look to talk about offensive line, Ira. I'm going to set you up here. Your buddy that you like to talk about, the guy's got a name like something on a Reservoir Dogs, Dante Scarnecchia. He may be taking a backseat to Joe Gilbert this year. Well, I'm going to throw a couple stats at you that I think you're going to be very surprised, and you might think twice about Mr. Scarnecchia. Mike Sando, I think you know Mike Sando. Yeah, he was at ESPN forever. He's at The Athletic now. He put out a stat that apparently Tom Brady is getting more time to throw this year than he has in years, like 5 or 6 years with the Patriots. And that's number one. Number two, Pro Football Reference actually has time to throw stats from the instant the ball snapped to the time guy lets the ball go. Brady is top five in the league as far as having time to throw.
In the Buck victories, he has had time to throw. In the Buck losses, he has not. We all saw the Saints game. He was hounded. He was pummeled. He was a beaten man at the end. He heard footsteps when they weren't even there. And that's when you know you really got to somebody. And if you get to Brady, you can get to anybody. And the Bears game, he was under a lot of harassment. And so those two games stick out to me. I don't think the timing would have been great if you're looking at snap to throw in those two games. And that's why, Steve, I'll say it again. I think the biggest factor in the success of the 2020 Bucks going forward is how much time Brady has to scan the field. Because if he has time, I like the Bucks' chances against anybody. But, you know, that left tackle, he's up and down, Steve. I guess he was up against Carolina, you know, against nondescript defensive ends for the most part, you know, not against Khalil Mack and not against Trey Hendrickson, who treated him like a rag doll. Steve, he's got time to throw until he doesn't. And there's been a couple of games this year when there's been too many breakdowns. And you know what the result is? A big fat L, as in loss.
Well, of course, you're talking about Donovan Smith, since you didn't name him. I figured I would name the guy. But yeah, Ira, it's no secret. I mean, we could have sat around here in July and said, you know, if Brady has time, he's going to stay healthy. And there's so many darn weapons, it should be just fine. So that's really what's played out all season long. I mean, look how many points they've scored in those victories. It's extraordinary. So, you know, that's what we're looking at. The Rams, though, I'll flip it here a little bit, Ira. The Rams, they're bringing in here Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. These are two superior receivers, very productive receivers. And when the Bucs faced the Saints, you know, they Emmanuel Sanders, Michael Thomas weren't really a tandem in those games. Just for health reasons and whatnot. So this poses a very different situation for the Bucs. Jared Goff gets the ball out very quickly at times in that offense. It's different than most offenses that you see. And, you know, the Bucs corners, Carlton Davis hasn't necessarily been an elite-type corner on shorter routes, and these are different types of receivers. I'm not sure what to expect here. It's one reason I asked Arians about Sean Murphy bunting, who he pretty much said is not yet back to taking over Jamel Dean as a starter like he was earlier in the season, but he's getting there.
You know, Steve, to be quite honest, the Rams offense to me, it's not scary. It's not a scary offense. Mm-hmm. They admit they've been carried by their defense. Even McVay says that, and he's an offensive-minded coach, obviously. Goff relies almost entirely on play action, and they run the ball pretty well. They got a backfield by committee. They don't have a Ronald Jones, you know, that's clearly the number one guy. They got Henderson. They're moving Cam Akers in a little bit now, the former FSU standout rookie that some people thought the Bucs might be able to, you know, grab off the board in round two, but it didn't happen. So he's starting to contribute a little bit. Woods and Kupp are good, Steve. They're good, but they're not Evans and Godwin. They're not. I think they're a notch below. Cooper Kupp's got two touchdown catches this year. I know because I drafted him high in the fantasy league, and he's been screwing up for me since week one. He catches balls, and he doesn't reach the end zone. But, you know, Goff, you know, you're going to gauge the NFC quarterback, 16 guys. I mean, where's he rank? Maybe number seven, maybe number eight. You know, he ain't Russell Wilson. I can tell you that. And he's not Drew Brees. It's a decent offense. They use a lot of razzle dazzle. They try to get you out of position with some unusual formations. And McVay's very inventive. And where did he start his career? At One Buck Place under Chucky. I think it was one season in 08. I saw a video of him talking about it. He said he didn't know what the hell he was doing that year. He had no idea what he was doing. I guess his title maybe was offensive quality control coach or something. You know, Gruden gave him a job. He said he had no clue. And he learned a lot that one year. You know what he learned? Don't collapse in December or it'll cost you your job. That's what he learned in 2008. But the strength of the Rams, Lee, it's on the other side of the ball with the best defensive player in football, generally acknowledged, Aaron Donald.
Oh, some interesting things about the Bucs and the Rams. The Rams have only had one game where they did not rush for over 100 yards. The Bucs have only given up 100 yards twice. They were both ugly games, New Orleans and the Giants. Of course, they won the Giants, but it was an ugly game. It was a nail-biter. It shouldn't have been, but it was. So it's going to be very interesting, and obviously they're missing Villa. And so it's interesting in that respect. I also look at last year's game. And the Rams, with pretty much the same personnel offensively, well, I shouldn't say it.
They had Todd Gurley at that time.
Yeah, Gurley, yeah, at that time, yeah, but he's not there now. But pretty much the same personnel offensively. And how many points did they ring up? 30-some points? I know that the Rams had a defensive score, pick six. Marcus Peters, wasn't it? If I remember correctly, Marcus Peters?
They might have scored 40 against the Bucs.
Yeah. Total picture is 40 points. That's what I said. One of them was a defensive score. You take away 7 points there. That wasn't
right.
The offense. That was defense. So 30-some points. They're a dangerous team. They're a dangerous team. If you just go by history with the Bucs. I was there in Los Angeles. It was completely, it was all offense that day. All offense. I just hope Brady gets time to throw. And here's something interesting for you, Ira. Chris Sims was talking about this. Chris Sims thought both the Giants game and significantly the New Orleans game, Arians was getting too cute with his offense. He had Brady in a shotgun, too much for Sims' liking. Obviously, against New Orleans, he thought that Arians was trying to force the ball to Brown. And he said, what changed against Carolina? Sims said that 58% of the time, Brady was under center in a two tight end offense. And Sims said, for Tom Brady, that's a winning offense. And he rattled off all kinds of stats. He basically said, when Tom Brady is under center in a two tight end offense, two tight end formation, he said the Bucs offense is lethal.
I think Sims is right. Now, Lee, I don't always agree with Sims. As a matter of fact, I seldom agree with Sims. I think he had a chart top 10 NFL quarterbacks. He didn't have Brady on the list. He had Ryan Tannehill. So I sent out a tweet saying, hey, did you ever hear about the guy down here in Tampa? So that surprised me a little bit. Steve, one thing we got to mention about all those points that the Rams ran up on the Bucs last season. Steve, that was an early season game, and the Bucs defense was not good until about week 10. So we got to remember that, Steve. This is not the same defense as the early year 2019 Buck defense. Not even close.
No, it feels like ancient history, and that was a freaky game. I think when Peters had that pick six, I think that made the game like, I think it made it to 45-40, and then the Bucs pulled away, and there was plenty of time left. So it was a crazy game. Sage, with this game, though, the Buccaneers, we know that the Rams' defense is extremely versatile. They've got playmakers all over the place. Jalen Ramsey, Bruce Arians talked about it, that he typically will stay with the number one guy and follow him inside, outside, wherever. So maybe they just stick Ramsey on Mike Evans and go from there. It's a tough call for how the Bucs approach this, but I still come back to that somebody should be open because they got all these weapons, and if Gronk is the real deal, I'm not sure that anybody should be able to cover him consistently one-on-one. And then there's that run game. Will they be able to get it going? They're going to try to establish it. They'd be crazy not to.
There's no question, Steve. And again, what does it come back to? How much pressure can the Rams exert on Brady? You know, Donald, they had 6 sacks last week against Russell Wilson, who's among the most mobile quarterbacks in the league, completely shut down Seattle. And Ramsey traveled with DK Metcalf and shut him down. 2 catches, 34 yards. But the Bucs have a lot more weapons. They also have Lockett, Seattle. But past that, they didn't have much. And the Rams have another good cornerback that's starting to emerge that had 2 picks against the Seahawks. But they had 6 sacks, and Donald had 0. Donald didn't have a sack. Leonard Floyd, of all people, got 3. But yet, when you talk to coordinators, the first thing they're going to say is, well, it all starts with Donald because he's tying up 2 or 3 guys. And the rest of these guys are all facing one-on-ones. You don't double Leonard Floyd. You got Aaron Donald to deal with. it's sort of like the Warren Sapp factor, and I'll dare say right now, Donald's better than Sapp. How do you like that, Steve? Ooh. Donald's better than Sapp. And I don't know if Sapp would admit it, but I'll say it. So, he's in his prime right now. He's already been the defensive player twice. He's going to be in the mix this year. He may or may not get in, but this could be number 3 for Donald. That's rarefied air, people. 3 times. Hey, one more point I want to make about the Rams defense.
Sure.
I don't have the exact stat, but I think I know what I'm talking about here. The second half of games this whole season, they're 9 games. You can't score against them in the second half. I mean, it's like they're giving up 3 points a game in the second half. So they're making all kinds of adjustments. Nice coaching staff over there. And I think it's going to be a real, real test for the Buck offense.
Sage, can I smack you around just a little bit?
Of course.
You said this last time, and you said it again. I can't let it slide because it drives me crazy. Russell Wilson, that guy takes more sacks than maybe anybody in the league and might finish his career as taking more sacks than anybody else. Just because he runs around and moves around doesn't mean he's good at avoiding sacks. He's got 30, eaten 30 this year. Last year, I believe he was close to 50. So that's what he does. Every year when Jameis Winston led the NFL in quarterback hits, it was the guy right next to him, 1 or 2 behind, was Wilson. So he holds on to the ball too long. I don't think they're going to have the same kind of success against the Bucs.
Not a bad point over there, is, but I got to give you that one. Wilson, with all his mobility, is prone to being sacked. Well said, Stevie.
All right. Thank you, Ira. I appreciate you letting me smack you around here. And as we heard to open the podcast, Bill Curry Ford, they're not messing around, and they're going to smack around the competition because they're giving you $1,000, up to $1,000 in an Amazon gift card for a leased vehicle or the purchase of a new vehicle this month at Bill Curry Ford. Our great friend Sean Sullivan is ready to help you however he can. And just because they're giving away Amazon gift cards doesn't mean anything has changed. You still get the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. BillCurryFord.com has its transparent pricing, and Sean is ready to throw on top of that an Ira Kaufman discount, which is the same as the Joe Bucks fan discount and the Scuttlebucks discount, just in case anybody's wondering. And he's ready to help you 24/7. BillCurryFord.com is the place to be. And as another reminder, Ira, of course, Big Storm Beer is the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast, and Big Storm is what you should be consuming for the holidays. Florida's very best craft beer. And as we heard earlier as well, our great friends at Florida's Elite Restoration are completely ready 24/7 to come out to your home, give you a free estimate. If anything seems suspicious about water or mold, that is your first call. They are licensed mold remediation specialists. They're not just some company that handles mold too. No, no. They are true experts in mold. And of course, they handle all other disaster relief. Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Ira, this Buccaneers Rams game, the defense, okay? You know what the Rams have to offer. You've seen the Bucs and how their defense has evolved this year. I wouldn't call it sharp, but it's still good. We know what makes it thrive, which is that the blitzing. What do you see that they need to do to key against this team that, despite it being a different offense, a different defense than it was last year. It's still the same concepts, and the Rams lit them up. So what do they need to change?
Well, I'll start with the offensive side of the ball, Steve. I think they and I got the words of Derek Brooks ringing in my ears. I do my podcast with Brooks, and he says the same thing every week. And, you know, this is from, maybe the best player in franchise history. You better listen to Derek Brooks. Run the football. Run the football. So Brooks is looking at it from a defensive point of view. What drives the defense crazy? Well, when you can't pin your ears back and you're not quite sure what the heck they're going to do. And he loves to establish the run. And for Brooks, it's not so much that you got to get 140 yards on the ground. You got to get 25, 30 rushing attempts. It's about the attempts for Brooks. From the Bucs defense standpoint, I think if they can stop Henderson and Akers and Brown on the ground, then I think Goff's in a lot of trouble. I don't think they have enough weapons in the passing game. They got an okay tight end. They got Kupp. They got Woods. But Goff's not good enough, I don't think, to exploit the Bucs consistently downfield without a good running game. And if the play action is neutralized and the Bucs don't respect the running game as the game progresses, I think Goff's going to be in trouble. So to me, you always hear, we're going to stop the run first. We're going to stop the run first. Lee, that drives us crazy because me and Lee are saying, screaming at the guy, it's a passing league. It's a passing league. Take it easy with the run defense. But in this particular game, I think Goff needs it more than most because he's almost always doing that play action, and that frees him up and buys him another couple of seconds because there's hesitation from the D-line and the linebackers. So I think in this particular case, if the Rams don't get 100 yards rushing, they're in a lot of trouble.
That's very interesting, Ira. I didn't get to ask the question, but Casey Rogers, the defensive line coach, very good defensive line coach for the Bucs. He was asked about run defense. Of course, they missed Villa. And then he kind of, without really being questioned, he sort of explained that, when they start prepping for their next opponent, first thing Bowles wants to know is, how do we stop the run? And once they establish in their think tank sessions how they're going to stop the run, then they start crafting the blitz packages. And I thought that was really interesting, that until they find out how they're going to stop the run, they don't know what kind of blitz packages they should use. It all falls together once they figure out who they're going to attack and how they're going to attack the run game. I thought that was really interesting.
First things first, right, Steve? Stop the run. That's the Bucs mantra.
It's what they're going to attempt to do, and I'm not sure what kind of success they're going to have. Ira, we have another huge topic to talk about, but let's get the picks out of the way, and I'll explain why we're going to do the picks first. But who do you want to start? You want Lee to start? You want me to start? Want to start? What
I'm
do you
gonna
want?
Go, I'm going to go last this week, Steven. I'm going to go last.
Lee, you want me to go first?
I'll get it out of the way. The primetime hex combined with Aaron Donald, combined with the good offense of the Rams. I think it's a good offense. I think they're going to win. They had success last year against Bulls. I understand what Ira's saying, that Hargraves was still on the team, and it's still, I don't know if bother is the right verb, but it's still intriguing to me how the defense flipped the switch the moment Hargraves was run off the team. I just find that more than a little bit interesting. Anyway, I think Novia catches up with them as well. Thinking of a score here, 27-14 Rams. That primetime hex continues for the Bucs.
All right. Now, just a reminder, we are all 7-3 on the season. All of us are 7-3. So we've got a late deadlock here, Sage. I know you like to keep track of that stuff. Lee had a lead.
So we're matching the team. We've matched the Buck record through 10 weeks. That's right.
We have matched the Buccaneers record. Lee had the lead last week, but we were able to equalize here with that big win in Carolina. All right. So here's what I'm thinking, Ira. I'm a little nervous because the Rams ran the ball very, very well against the Bears. Now, that's very impressive. If you're going to just grind the ball out against the Bears, that is tough stuff. And we talked about how they've run the ball very consistently this year. However, they're also 1-3 on the road. And I'm not going to pretend that that's not a thing. They weren't very good on the road last year, losing their last couple of games on the road when they needed to win to get to the playoffs. So they're just not very good on the road, and they have kicking troubles. They signed Matt Gay this week, and he may actually win the starting job. I hope he does, because I would bet against Matt Gay in what I think is going to be a close game. No problem. You know, get him into that south end zone on Monday Night Football, let him have a meltdown. Fantastic. So I just think the Bucs will be able to put up points. And I think we're going to be looking at a shootout. Even though the defenses are good, I still think we're going to be looking at a shootout kind of game. I'm going to go Bucs 32, Rams 28.
All right, it's up to me to break the tie. And as I said to Mr. Derek Brooks the other day, while he made a selection, while he was wearing a Buck jersey and smoking a victory cigar, and I knew who he was picking. So I'm breaking the tie, and I'm going to go with the visitors, gentlemen. I'm joining Mr. DeKemper. Glass half full. I'm not sure they're over this primetime hex. I don't like this matchup. I think the Rams are a very well-balanced team. And to me, they look like the best team in the NFC West. Maybe the other Bucks would meet them again in the postseason. Steve, I'm saying Rams 21, Bucks 17.
Low scoring. Sage going with the under and the Rams. All right, well, we're going to have some separation. Either I'll be bringing up the rear, or I'll be able to gloat a little bit on the next podcast. That's always fun. I don't know. I mean, the Rams are really good. It should be a fun game. And I like the extra.
Brooks said this was the toughest game of the year for him to pick. The toughest game of the year for him to make a selection. So, you know, he thinks it's going to be a close one.
Yeah, you would think so. And I got to ask you this, Ira, but we still have something big to talk about. But let me sneak this in here. We're at that time of year where if Todd Bowles and Byron Leftwich are going to get job offers after this season, now this is the kind of game that's going to be scrutinized by an owner who's sitting back on Monday Night Football wanting to see what these coaches have to bring against top competition, and the spotlight's on, and owners are already thinking, you know, hey, if we lose this week, you know, maybe we make a move at the end of the season, you know, week 11, you know, that kind of thing. So how much pressure do you think is on Bowles and Leftwich? And do you think they even feel that pressure that they've started to look at assistants and start to sit home and be like, hey, you know, I got to win this because this could be my key to getting a job here?
I think this is a big, fat opportunity for Mr. Leftwich, a big, big one. Because I've been raving about this Rams defense. It's tough. Now, let's not forget, Seattle was leading the league in points per game. Leading the league, number one. They did very little against the Rams last week. Very little. They were shackled. And, you know, the Buck beef offense is outstanding. But Seattle was averaging, you know, 32 points, and the Bucks are averaging 29. So I think Leftwich got his work cut out here. From Aaron Donald on back to Jalen Ramsey, this is a rugged, talented defense. They don't give you much, and in the second half, they give you even less. So if Leftwich puts up 30, 34 points Monday night, and without the benefit of a pick six or a punt return by Antonio Brown, that's going to be very impressive. Lee, I think it would help him generate some serious interviews in the offseason, pending a Buck collapse toward the end of the year, and I don't see that happening. I think it's a nice audition night for Byron Leftwich.
Very well could be. You know, that's going to get noticed, especially who you're playing. It's going to get noticed.
All right, Eric, got to throw this out there. I'm doing it at the end because it's such a free-flowing situation. You never know when the guy's going to attack the neighbor's dog or who knows what's going to happen next. Antonio Brown, we know what happened. We talked about it last podcast at his condo complex in the little dust-up there with the security folks. But Bruce Arians took his first hard questions on that Thursday afternoon, and Arians confirmed, he clarified, that whether we believe him or not, that's unclear. That's what we need your wisdom for. But he was very clear that the Buccaneers knew that a week or so before they signed Antonio Brown, he fired his bicycle at a security guard shack, and he did some security camera crunching and had a little freak-out session and berated some people in South Florida before he came to Tampa, and they were good with that. So what does that clarity tell you? Do you believe it? Where are we with Antonio Brown?
I'm skeptical, gentlemen. I'm skeptical. It wouldn't be the first time that Arians is alibiing in some ways for Tom Brady yet again. Again, Brady is a central character in this whole thing because we know the relationship and we know the consistent pounding by Brady to get this guy on the roster. It doesn't happen without Tom Brady. He's not at one buck place. It was not a Jason Light move. It wasn't a Glazer move. It wasn't an Arians move. And so for him to say that the Bucs knew about it, I'm a little skeptical because I think if they did know about it, I think that would give Light and Arians a little more ammunition to pull back against Brady and his insistence on getting this guy in here. And I think that would have been enough to say to Brady, Tom, we understand what you want, but this happened in mid-October while the guy's on probation. That's it. We can't do this. So my guess is, gentlemen, unless I'm proven wrong, and maybe I will be, I don't think they had a clue about that incident in South Florida. Lee, what do you think?
Personally, I think this is blown out of proportion. He threw a buck against the shack. Okay, and so what? He tore up a security guard camera. From what I understand, it was replaced. He paid for it. Problem solved. Move on. To me, it's just an issue with his condo association, the homeowners association, and him. So I just think it's overblown. Now, does he have a pattern of freaking out? Yeah. Did he punch someone in this incident? Not that anybody stated. The police report didn't suggest that. So I think this is all just, way, way, way blown out of proportion. Not condoning what he did. Please don't misunderstand me. I just think it's blown out of proportion. He wasn't employed by the Bucs. Like Gary said so far that we know, allegedly, he's kept his nose clean since he's been with the Bucs, although it's only been, what, 3 weeks? So who knows? But I just think this nonsense about the condo association, to me, it doesn't even come close to tossing furniture from, what, a 30th floor window and almost hitting a little boy. That's a different animal. That's putting people's lives in danger. Freaking out over a security guard shack and ripping the camera apart, which he paid for to replace. It happened. Okay, next. So
Steve,
to me, it means nothing to me. Yeah.
Steve, could you suggest credibly that the reason that the homeowner association declined to press charges against Antonio Brown is because maybe there had been some other incidents and they were worried about retaliation by Antonio Brown, and thus that is the driving force for declining to press charges where otherwise they would have proceeded? Is it Brown's reputation? Could there have been some other incidents in the neighborhood? But apparently, they were somehow convinced that pressing charges was not in their interest, Steve, and I found that a little strange.
Well, we're never going to know the truth, so I don't know, Ira. I could be, could not be. I don't know. But I do want to say, Ira, just because I thought it was important, you know, you basically threw it out there that Jason Light and Bruce Arians did not want Antonio Brown, and this could have been ammo for them to push back on Brady. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that, you know, Light had no history with Antonio Brown. And I think, you know, he just saw him as a talented guy versus Arians had that history of, this guy was a troublemaker. He was a pain in my ass 8 years ago. I don't know. I can't lump the two of them together because Arians had that history. So I don't really know, you know, where that all stands in the triumvirate of Light, Brady, and Arians making decisions at One Buck Palace. So I don't know about that.
I guess where I'm coming from the Light perspective is Lee, hopefully he learned his lesson with Swaggy Baker in terms of a disruptive personality in the locker room and the dangers thereof. And I'm not blaming, you know, the 2017 5-11 season totally on Swaggy Baker, but he didn't help. And
I agree with you. You know, in that respect, I agree with you, Ira. That was my biggest concern because those two Redskins absolutely destroyed that locker room. And, you know, we didn't know about this incident, number one. And I was very leery about this signing for that very reason. And if they didn't have enough ammo to sway them that, you know, we don't have any concerns about Antonio Brown, this little incident, and I consider it a little incident, this little incident at the condo complex shouldn't have, you know, they already had their minds made up that Brown's history wasn't bad enough or was sufficient enough that they could still sign him. I don't know if sufficient is the right word. Tainted enough is a better word. Then, you know, what's this little incident going to do?
Yeah.
Really small potatoes. And I agree with you, Iron. I think there was some insinuation that the condo association was concerned about retribution. Well, that's between the condo association and Brown. Again, I just think this is small potatoes compared to what Brown has done in the past.
Yeah, I look at it as you know, really about the future, right? So when I say that, I mean that nobody right now, as we stand here, the three of us and anybody at One Buck and Bucks fans, nobody would be surprised at all if tomorrow at practice, Antonio Brown got pissed off and punched Chris Godwin in the face and knocked two teeth out. So
exactly.
Right. So that's my point, is that if they knew this guy had anger issues and is throwing stuff and having tantrums and berating people, you know, a week before they signed him, and you're not going to be surprised if he decks a teammate, then maybe he doesn't belong there. Then it isn't really small potatoes if it's potentially the, you know, he's belting a teammate or something. So that's where my concern lies.
Shouldn't the threat of punching a general manager have been red in the flag? That's where I'm coming from. I mean, Antonio Brown threatened to punch Mike Mayock, allegedly. So, you know, if that's not going to tell you you're dealing with a volatile person, I don't think a disturbance about throwing a bike against the shack and, you know, whatever he did to the camera, I don't think that's, you know, to me that doesn't tip the scales whatsoever. If you're not moved by the fact that he threatened to punch the general manager.
Steve, with 7 weeks left in the regular season, you know, I think if I was Caesar's Sportsbook right now, I think it's even money. I think it's even money that Brown is involved in some kind of an altercation at One Buck Place. That's even money with 7 weeks left. Even money.
I hear you, Sage. I hear you. Well, the bigger stage, the bigger fight is on Monday night. Monday night football. It's a beautiful thing, Ira. We all get to sit. We all get to sit around and watch Buccaneers football on Sunday after we go shopping at Bill Curry Ford. We get our new ride, and then we cruise over to Big Storm and stock up for the Sunday night football and for the Bucks, and we're all good.
Arians pulling out all the stops to reverse this prime time problem, this issue that has emerged here in Tampa. And I would not be so quick if I was Arians to disregard my suggestion. Bring the boys over to Tampa International, get them some pizza and whatever Subway sandwiches you ordered while they were waiting to board that plane to Charlotte. It worked once, Lee, and it led to 46 points. Do it again.
You mean let Tom Brady go hungry? I can't picture him eating pizza or sandwiches. I just can't.
Get him a beet salad. Keep him happy.